intercepted. Rasul Douglas with the takeaway.
Amari Cooper's been shut out. This one's passed in the direction of Cooper, and Rasul Douglas has it. Big play.
It's over. It is over. Thought I felt vindicated for about a month. Not even just a month, really, the last 6-7 weeks of the 2018 season. I felt vindicated in the performance of Rasul Douglas. And I said it on Sunday after that Minnesota game where I thought it was a lot of coverage breakdowns, but Rasul Douglas was part of two deep bombs for touchdowns at the hands of wide receiver Stephon Diggs of the Minnesota Vikings. And instantly I thought, and we were saying it all summer, Gino, myself, Lars on the podcast, that all it was going to take to get Jalen Mills and or Ronald Darby back into this lineup was health and maybe one bad performance by Rasul Douglas that would open the window of opportunity for Jim Schwartz to get his guys back into the starting lineup. Never thought Rasul Douglas had a fair shake. I thought his rookie year he played really well in place of Ronald Darby. I guess it made sense to go back to Darby there considering the investment you put in Darby at corner. But then last year, Darby consistently cannot stay healthy. Jalen Mills continues to get burned down the field. Same liabilities as Rasul Douglas, but doesn't have nearly the ball skills, or Darby doesn't have nearly the tackling ability. And yet Douglas couldn't even get in for a guy like Dexter McDougal. That was last year. Then Rasul Douglas gets into the lineup week 12 and on because Jim Schwartz, just his hand was forced. He had to put him in there because of the injuries. Rasul Douglas finishes that season as the number one rated cornerback against the run and in tackling. He finished as the 12th overall graded out cornerback, according to Pro Football Focus, from weeks 12 and on. He was shutting down the likes of Michael Thomas, who the Saints were purposely avoiding Rasul Douglas' side in a playoff game. He was making plays on the likes of DeAndre Hopkins. Then this year, he's the only guy that can stay healthy. The entire cornerback room is breaking down in front of him. He's a top 20 corner, according to Pro Football Focus. He had the most forced incompletions in the NFL. He had the number one amount of pass deflections after 5 weeks of the NFL season. And we had it this morning. It doesn't matter. It's not enough. Jalen Mills and Ronald Darby are going to be the starters moving forward when they're healthy. That was straight from the mouth of Doug Peterson. And if I'm Rasul Douglas here, I'm throwing my hands up in the air and I'm saying, what else can I do? What else can I do? Sure, you've heard me. And look, I'm trying to be as unbiased as possible here. I feel like I've been pretty objective, even for my admiration of Rasul Douglas and my belief in him. My belief in him is as a CB2. I have said on the podcast over and over and over again this year and last year and the year before that Rasul Douglas is a mismatch against guys like DeSean Jackson, like Terry McLaurin, like Stephon Diggs, like Amari Cooper or Michael Gallup when he's not used in correct situations, when he's not given safety help, when he's playing up at the line of scrimmage and is not able to get his hands on receivers. He is a liability in those areas because of his unathleticism, because he lacks what he makes up for in size, you know, length and ball skills. He does not have in, you know, quick twitch, explosiveness, long range speed. He is not there with those kind of wide receivers from a footwork perspective. He's just not there compared to other guys. To me, if you want to replace him with a Jalen Ramsey or a Chris Harris or a Patrick Peterson, 100% go for it. Never here going to sit here on the podcast and tell you that he's a CB1. But the fact that he's been given no chances when everybody's at full strength. And when basically Jim Schwartz has told him now that there is no way for him to win a job without almost playing a perfect season, because he went from weeks 2 up until week 6 for an entire month, he played almost flawless football. And then that Minnesota game, he doesn't get a lot of safety help. Yes, you would like a corner to be able to make up for that and make a play and kind of bail you out for once. At the same time, that's all it was going to take for Rasul Douglas to get pulled out of this lineup for Ronald Darby and Jalen Mills. Those are Jim Schwartz's guys. And the frustration here with me is not that Rasul Douglas. It's more so that Jalen Mills and Ronald Darby get this leash that Rasul Douglas doesn't. And I don't understand why. Tell me right now, for you out there that disagree with my opinion on Rasul Douglas and on Ronald Darby and Jalen Mills, tell me what those two have done to warrant this kind of, you know, unreasonable close-mindedness when it comes to those guys as the starters when they're healthy. I get it over a guy like Sidney Jones, 100%. But tell me right now what Jalen Mills and Ronald Darby have been, what they've done better than Rasul Douglas over the past 3 years. And don't tell me they were the starting corners throughout the playoff run in 2017. Because if you look at that Super Bowl, yes, Jalen Mills, fine, I'll give him a pass for the playoffs. Ronald Darby, did you see what happened in that Super Bowl when they put Rob Gronkowski on the left side against Darby? Did you see, before Brandon Cooks got hurt, what he was doing to Ronald Darby? I don't want to hear that they were part of the Super Bowl run as the starting corners. Last year, Rasul Douglas was the starting corner on a defense that nearly got all the way to the NFC Championship game. So don't point to that. Tell me right now, tweet at me, at DiBiaseLOE, why should Jalen Mills, I wish it was Jalen Ramsey, tell me right now why Jalen Mills and Ronald Darby should be starting over Rasul Douglas. I'll wait, because you can say Rasul Douglas can't cover the deep ball. Can Jalen Mills cover the deep ball? I don't know. I feel like I've been on Eagles Twitter long enough to remember all the double move jokes about Jalen Mills over the last, 2016 up until this very point. Also, he's coming off a Lisfranc injury. He wasn't fast before. So you can make that point about Rasul Douglas. I'll counter that with Jalen Mills. Let's go to Ronald Darby. Ronald Darby is a liability as a tackler. Ronald Darby is the worst tackling corner on this team. He is also the most injury-prone player. They called out Sidney Jones last week for not being able to play through pain. What about Ronald Darby? How come he consistently gets his job back without having to fight for it? He missed all of training camp this year while Rasul Douglas, Avante Maddox, and Sidney Jones look great. And Darby walks back into week one and gets his job. Then he's getting burned left and right by the likes of Julio Jones, Calvin Ridley, Kenny Galladay, Marvin Jones. And he still was locking down one side of the field and Rasul Douglas and Sidney Jones had to rotate another spot. Tell me why these two should be the starters. And I'll listen. Over Rasul Douglas. I'm never going to sit here and tell you that Rasul Douglas should be their bona fide CB1, that they should give him this massive contract and that it's never his fault. I think a lot of it is Rasul Douglas' fault. He is not a CB1. I can't tell you how many times I have said that. But for me, there's an accountability thing here with Jim Schwartz, and there's just a stubbornness to him that we talk about all the time on this podcast that is beyond frustrating. If I'm Rasul Douglas, I don't know what else I can do. I mean, for me at this point, I got another year on my contract. There's no way I'm agreeing to an extension because there's no way you're going to be a starter. They've already told you that. Even with Jalen Mills as a free agent next year, even with Ronald Darby as a free agent next year, you think they're going to go in next year with Rasul Douglas as one of their starting corners? No way. They're either going to trade for a guy, they're either going to sign a guy in free agency, they're going to bring back one or both of Darby or Mills, and they're probably going to draft a corner really high, and they're going to have Rasul Douglas be one of your backups on the outside that they won't let try it to play safety, that they won't play inside at nickel for, I mean, that makes a good amount of sense, that they won't put on mismatch, you know, based on matchups, they won't put him on bigger receivers. It's over. I mean, for me, this is kind of the end of the Rasul Douglas era for me. You're not going to hear me. Well, I mean, you might if Jalen Mills goes out in the field on Sunday night against Dallas and is getting destroyed by Devin Smith up and down the field, and if Ronald Darby can't tackle Michael Gallup, you're going to hear me bring it up again. But at the same time, me advocating for Douglas as a starter now, to me, is out the window, unless they made a change of defensive coordinator. And I don't know about you, but I don't see that happening anytime soon. So the Free Sewell campaign is back on, but at the same time, it's more of a statement than it's actually a movement anymore, because I think that's it. And again, he was terrible against Minnesota. I thought, again, the safety help, like in zone coverage, if you actually understand what was happening during those plays, you know a lot of that is on Roddy McLeod and Malcolm Jenkins. At the same time, Douglas was not good during that game. For the most part, week one against Washington, against a guy like Terry McLaurin, yeah, he's gonna look bad against those players, 100%. But you can't sit here and tell me that you didn't like what he did against Julio Jones on Sunday Night Football. You can't tell me that you weren't impressed by him not falling for double moves on Davante Adams, holding Davante Adams to, what, under 20 receiving yards? All of Davante Adams' yardage in that game, he almost had like 200, came on the other side against Sidney Jones and against Avante Maddox. Rasul Douglas held one of the best route runners in check, and that's one of his weak points, is going up against strong route runners like Davante Adams and like Amari Cooper, and against fast guys like even Robbie Anderson. Look, I know it was Luke Falk, but if you look at the coverage of Rasul Douglas in a vacuum, if you just look at his assignment, what he was supposed to do before Luke Falk got sacked or anything, just the one-on-one matchup, how many times he was beat by Robbie Anderson, there wasn't that many times where he was beat. He made plays against TJ Hockenson in the red zone. You can line him up against tight ends like that. It's frustrating for me. I think he should be a starter. And it's just, look, I think he is Jalen Mills, only lengthier, a better tackler, and he has far superior ball skills. If I'm Rasul Douglas, I'm throwing my hands up in the air and saying, what else can I do? There's nothing. It's Jalen Mills no matter what. That's a draft day reference, by the way. If you know the Alex Mack no matter what post-it note, I tweet that out all the time. Jalen Mills no matter what. And Ronald Darby. They're going to give Darby and Mills a chance here. They're going to be the starting corners. And I'm sorry to open up the podcast on such a rant about a player that maybe isn't as important to you guys as it is to me. But it's a frustrating past couple days within the Eagles organization. And coming up next, we'll get into the other reason it's frustrating. And it's this anonymous sourcing that continues to be leaked from players inside the locker room over the last 2 years. And me and Gino touched on it yesterday, but I want to get a little deeper into it coming up today because we had some more updates on the situation. Alshon Jeffrey commented on it. He was asked if he was the anonymous source. So did Nelson Aguilar. So that's coming up next right here in the Locked On Eagles podcast. Rant over about Rasul Douglas, but I will not be silenced. Free Zool, free Zool, free Zool. We'll be right back. Today's Locked On Eagles podcast is sponsored by MyBookie. Ladies and gentlemen, between football season, the MLB playoffs, and the start of the NBA and NHL seasons this fall, it's time to get off the sidelines and get in on the action. If you're the kind of guy who likes to bet a little to win a lot, try a parlay. For instance, if you like a couple of the big favorites this week, parlays are perfect because they let you bet multiple games together for a much bigger payout. So, if you're going to bet this season, do the smart thing and go to mybookie.ag today because no one gives you more ways to win. If you really want to support your team this season, don't just sit on the sidelines. Get in on the action, and if you join right now, MyBookie will double your first deposit using our promo code LOCKEDON to activate the offer. Once again, for MyBookie to double your first deposit, use our promo code LOCKEDON to double your cash. Visit MyBookie.ag today. You play, you win, and you get paid. We thank them for sponsoring the Locked On Eagles podcast, and we'll be right back. All right, everybody, this is Louis DiBiase wrapping up the week of shows, a Friday edition of Locked On Eagles. I ranted about Rasul Douglas for segment one because Doug Peterson said on Friday that going forward, you can expect, it's safe to assume, that Jalen Mills and Ronald Darby will be your starting corners. So back to the old ways of Jim Schwartz and 2017 and the beginning of 2018. I guess it didn't matter that over a month of the season, quarterbacks had under a 60 quarterback rating when targeting Rasul Douglas. But all right, I think you heard enough about Douglas last segment. And also on Twitter today, I shout out to my boy Lawrence. Me and him going back and forth. He's a very reliable and I would say passionate listener of the podcast, and he's always chiming in on the conversation on Twitter. Make sure to follow me, shameless plug, at DiBiase, L-O-E. And another thing that had me fired up today, it's just, I'm not in a good mood. I want to be talking about Dallas week. It's a battle between two 3-3 teams that really need this game. On Sunday night primetime football, the Eagles haven't beat the Cowboys in a year. DeMarcus Lawrence, Dexter Lawrence, the Giants wish. DeMarcus Lawrence coming out today and going after Doug Peterson, telling him to shut up and sit on the sidelines. And, you know, there's trash talk. Like, this is a legitimate rivalry in sports. There aren't a lot of real rivalries left. I agree with LeBron James, who says it in the NBA all the time. There are really no more rivalries in sports. For the most part, I actually agree, but I think Dallas and Philadelphia is still one of the real ones, and these teams don't like each other, the fan bases don't like each other, and I want to be talking about how Lawrence has zero sacks against the Eagles over 9 games. That's what I want to be getting into today, but it's hard when you see the same things happening to the Eagles in a negative light, the drama. And not just with the cornerback position. You know, we get on Jim Schwartz a lot here, and we talk about the CB position. Look, I don't want to be talking about Rasul Douglas, why he should play. I want to have a guy like Jalen Ramsey so that I don't care what happens to a Rasul Douglas. But it's just frustrating when you take a guy like that in the third round, and he almost never had a chance from the start, which makes you think, why did Howie Roseman even draft him in 2017? So that's the frustrating issue, is I want to be talking about this Dallas game, but you have that going on today. You have this injury report, right, where DeSean Jackson's going to be out on Sunday night. You have Jason Peters out, Nigel Bradham's out of this game, Darren Sproles. And yet, people continue to go after Carson Wentz, right? You have a lot of media people saying, Carson Wentz needs to be better, as if he should be the one catching these 17 drop balls by the receivers. It's the most in the NFL, that he should be the one stopping this offensive line from taking stupid penalties, or from this defense not being able to cover a rock, or Jim Schwartz not being able to adjust coverage-wise. It's, for some reason, it's Carson Wentz's fault. And the frustrating part now is, you know, you see during the summer, the offseason, when that Carson Wentz hit piece came out, that a lot of the players, everyone that was important within that locker room, everyone that had value within that organization, came out and defended Carson Wentz. Even former players did, Torrey Smith, former coaches did, and Frank Reich. So you thought at least the organization is smart enough. They know. They gave this dude $100 million guaranteed. He's been playing lights out this year. He's the only reason they're 3-3. He's the reason they should be 5-1 right now, right? At least the organization knows that. Then you have this player leak once again that comes out this year. This anonymous player who didn't want to put his name behind a comment that is going to stir up drama during one of the most important weeks of the season, coming after Carson Wentz. Of all people this year to come after, it's Carson Wentz. And it's about the opposite thing that this supposed source, I think it's the same person, that told Josina Anderson last year that Carson Wentz was targeting Zach Ertz too much. He wasn't spreading the ball around and down the field enough. Well, now, maybe it's the same person. Another anonymous player this week said that Carson Wentz is checking the ball down too much, that, or he's not checking it down enough, that even Peyton Manning knew when to check the ball down. And it's, what does Carson have to do? Is he just a total jerk in the locker room? Are we missing something? Is he the fakest person in the NFL and all of sports, that what we see during press conferences, what we see during the community, what we're seeing about players talk about him, is that all a show? Is that all just because he's that important to the organization and he's untouchable, so they're just gonna baby him? Is that really what's happening? Is Carson Wentz that big of an ass in the locker room? If not, who is this person that has this vendetta against Carson Wentz? Who is this frustrated and doesn't like Carson Wentz this much that they're going to continue to just go behind the team's back, not talk to the quarterback in person about issues that they have, not talk to the front office, right? Because the same person went after Howie Roseman for not trading for Jalen Ramsey this week. Not talk to the organization, the coaches, the staff, right? The players. Instead, they're going to go to the media and create drama. Who is this player? And whoever they are they watching the games? Because you're commenting on the offense needing to be simpler. I don't know how much more simple this offense can get. They can't push the ball down the field. And even when Carson Wentz has gone down the field, it has worked this year. Unless you have the 5 big-time drops that Eagles receivers have this year, most in the NFL. Unless you have Dallas Goedert dropping 2 big-time 25-plus yard throws. Nelson Aguilar dropping a game-winner. J.J. Arcega-Whiteside dropping a game-winner. Outside of that, Carson Wentz has been efficient this year, pushing the ball down the field. He's not Jameis Winston throwing it into quadruple coverage. He's not Josh Allen throwing it into triple coverage from the opposite side of the field as he's running to the sidelines on the right. He makes that vintage Madden throw back across the field to the left and it gets picked off. That's not Carson Wentz. So for me, it can't be a receiver, right? They got to understand that Carson Wentz right now has the second fewest negative plays only behind Patrick Mahomes at quarterback, right? They got to understand that he's in the middle of the league when it comes to deep passes attempted and efficiency. So it can't be Nelson and Aguilar, right? Or Alshon Jeffrey. And if it was, the hypocrisy, considering those guys can't catch the football this year. Alshon today said it wasn't him. And I believe that. Nelson Aguilar said it wasn't him. And thank God it wasn't Nelson Aguilar. And it just never seemed in those guys' character to go behind Carson Wentz's back and say that. Considering the hypocrisy, considering the statement made, you would think an offensive player would be aware enough to realize that that just factually is incorrect, that statement. And that, I think Carson Wentz is close with those two guys. You know, people were saying it was Alshon last year too. I don't think it was at all. I can't imagine it was him, especially considering when Wentz and Alshon are both healthy, they don't have the best chemistry down the field when it comes to jump balls like Nick Foles did with him. But for the most part, they have a strong connection. This year, they've been going after each other, going to each other a whole lot in a productive manner, especially in the red zone. Again, they both haven't been healthy at the same times the last 2 years, and they haven't really got the jump ball down. But at the same time, these guys are on par with each other. They are in sync in the red zone. And last week, Alshon had 12 targets. So I'm glad that it wasn't those two receivers, because it would have been, the hypocrisy of that would have been insane. And also, it just, you know, it would have been disappointing, considering you just think of what the actual quote was, not just people like to just say, oh, someone's saying something bad about Carson Wentz again, so it's a bad look for the organization. It is, but more so it's a bad look on this player than it is Carson Wentz or this locker room. I don't think it's the majority opinion, the consensus feeling about Carson Wentz being this quote. I think this is one or two salty players that have a vendetta against Carson Wentz. The whole locker room has defended that guy over the past year and a half. So it's just frustrating seeing this over and over again. If I'm Carson Wentz, he's the only person that should be able to put anybody on blast right now. Carson Wentz should be the ones making comments about his players, but that's not the kind of player, that's not the kind of leader he is. If I'm Carson Wentz, God, some of you out there just do not deserve him as your quarterback. And I'm talking about players, I'm talking about the media. I mean, me as a media member now, I don't want to go back to covering a guy like Sam Bradford. Are you kidding me? You want more checkdowns? You want on 3rd and 9, Sam Bradford to throw a 2-yard swing route to DeMarco Murray? I mean, come on, people. It's only been 4 years since that happened. We're trying to go back to that instead of the quarterbacking we're getting now from one of the best in the league. I mean, get out of here. This sounds like a defensive player that made these comments, which is even more hilarious, by the way, that a defensive player would make these comments. Look, the receivers would be huge hypocrites if they made this comment because they can't hold on to the football this year. 17 drops in the NFL is a league high. But the defense would be even worse. The defense has started off slower than the offense this year. They are 32nd in almost every passing defense statistic. They can't cover anything at wide receiver. There's miscommunications all around. They're running like a chicken with their head cut off. Jim Schwartz has been a terrible defensive coordinator this year, if you ask me. It's all black and white with him. Even when he adjusts, he's going all in on that adjustment. He's not balancing it based on game situations. And he's throwing his corners back in there, regardless of performance and injury. So if it's a defensive player, that's even worse. For me, the only person that maybe has an argument here is an offensive lineman. And Lane Johnson last year came out and said that he did not like that a player was saying things behind the team's back anonymously to a media member. Jason Kelsey came to Howie Roseman's defense on radio 3 days ago, and he defended Carson Wentz last year. What is it? It can't be Brandon Brooks, based on the way he is, his character. Is it Isaac Seumalo? Is it Jason Peters? I mean, again, even those guys got to be smart enough to realize that what they said just is incorrect. So it's just really frustrating, and I'm glad Alshon Jeffrey today said it was not him, that him and Carson Wentz have a strong relationship. Nelson Aguilar said that's just not what he's about at all, and it makes perfect sense. Those guys are not drama-filled wide receivers. They're not divas at all for that position that can have a lot of those kind of characters there. They're not those players, so we got a little closer in finding out who it was today as the media kind of pressed Alshon, Nelly, and Zach Ertz and some of those guys about who this anonymous player is. Because once again, it just going about it this way cannot help your organization at all. What's it supposed to do? The only thing this can do now is create drama, because it's going to piss off a lot of players. It's going to divide the locker room. You're going to be thinking about who this is that's saying this. For Carson Wentz again, now this is the third time that somebody has said something about him behind his back. Heading into a Sunday night game that you have to win to get to 4-3 to be atop the NFC East, it's just stupid. Whoever this player is just dumb. For me, go to your quarterback if you have a problem. Go to your general manager. Go to your coach. If this locker room is as close as we think it is and that it's been for the past 4 years, you should be able to keep this in-house and communicate directly to your teammates. To me, this is cowardice behavior, and it can only hurt your team. It's not going to help. If you really want things to change with the offense, if you really want things to change for Carson Wentz and his personality, if you really have that big of a problem with who he is, wouldn't it be more correctable? Wouldn't it be able to be fixed better by actually talking to those people instead of going to the media and not putting your name behind it? You can call somebody out through the media. Coaches have done it before. Doug Peterson said it to Sidney Jones. You can light fires under people by doing that. Not this way. Not being a snitch, not being a snake that doesn't put your name behind it. It's frustrating. I think it's just unwarranted. And once again, I'm really frustrated if I'm Carson Wentz. I thought last year that piece by Joel Santoliquido just did not have a lot of basis to it at all. The points that they made, even the quotes, just seemed like people that just had real beef with Carson Wentz. And none of the takes really seemed accurate. And again, there was personal attacks outside of quotes there for that one. I think that was just a pure hit piece. And then, you know, the Zach Ertz thing, I guess you can make a point that they were over-targeting him last year. I think a lot of that had to do with Carson Wentz having a broken back and not being able to push the ball down the field. So whoever this guy is, if it's a defensive player, you're a hypocrite. If it's a wide receiver, if it's you, Mac Hollins, or J.J. Arcega-Whiteside, you're a hypocrite. Carson Wentz is not the problem with this Philadelphia Eagles team. He is the last thing that I want to complain about. And it's not just, oh, I'm going to defend the quarterback no matter what. No, I've said before, there are times where he can check it down more. There are plays where it's first and 10 and you have good field position and, you know when a play is over and not take a hit for your own sake. You've had a torn ACL and a broken back the past 2 years, a fractured back the last 2 seasons. So get the ball out. Absolutely. But at the same time, my eyes aren't lying to me. I have seen Carson Wentz get more and more controlled in that area throughout the last couple seasons. I've seen that improvement from him. I've seen him know when to just check it down, when to take the shorter stuff, then when to push the ball down the field. At the same time, you drafted him, and to me, at first overall, you were going to draft him over Jared Goff because he has those abilities. Because in a game, when you're down 24-3, he can escape three defenders, he can draw in a safety, and he can dish it to Alshon Jeffrey on a dime, on the run, across his body, down the field. He can do that, and he can pull you within a touchdown in a game that you had no business being in. So for me, there's a certain level, too, where we don't want to discourage him from being that guy. You want to pick and choose your spots right. I think he has done really well at that the past couple years. So it's not just me defending the quarterback no matter what. If you actually use context, what the quotes are saying are wrong, and they're unwarranted this year. When a quarterback is terrible, I'm going to say it. When the Eagles signed Sam Bradford, when they traded for him, I didn't go an entire year defending him because he was what the Eagles viewed as their quarterback going forward. Even Nick Foles had limitations. After winning a Super Bowl, there's a lot of people that are committed to that guy no matter what. They are attached to him for life because of what he gave this fan base. At the same time, you got to be willing to say last year, hey, against the Saints in the playoffs, after they were up 14-0, Nick Foles struggled. He could not push the ball down the field. He couldn't get anything going. Against the Chicago Bears the game before, he was great late in the game, but for the most part, throughout that game, he was pretty average. So I'm not someone that's going to just sit here and defend Carson Wentz no matter what. But this year is just not the year to be going after number 11. To me, it's the offense, it's the drops, it's the penalties, it's the inconsistencies when it comes to play calling and when it comes to adjustments made by Jim Schwartz and the cornerback group just being god-awful this year. The source, whoever it is just wrong. And if I'm Lane Johnson, I'm taking a blowtorch to that locker room and trying to find out who this person is because I would not be pleased. This is a huge week. You cannot go down 3-4. Heading into Buffalo, which is a really, trust me, living up in Buffalo, it's a tough place to play. It's a defense that is atop the league right now in the NFL. Former Eagles defensive coordinator Sean McDermott knows what he's doing with those guys on that defensive unit. Then you got the Chicago Bears coming to town. Then the New England Patriots and the Seattle Seahawks, two of the best teams in the NFL. This is just unwarranted, unwanted drama. That's only going to hurt your football team. We got to hit another break. This is the Locked On Eagles podcast. Louis DiBiase joining you on this Friday edition, ranting up a storm. I hope you're enjoying it, though. We got a 4 to 6 podcasts a week. Just subscribe on any provider or check us out on lockdowneagles.com. I'll wrap up the show coming up next. Don't go anywhere. All right, everybody. This is Louis DiBiase of the Locked On Eagles podcast, a Friday edition of the episode. We got 2 days until the Eagles head to Dallas, Sunday night football. If they win, they're in first place. They're 4-3, and the train is back on the tracks. That's the thing here. That's why I'm frustrated about this anonymous player. It's not like they're the Atlanta Falcons where they're 1-5. Carson Wentz is playing terrible. Nobody's in sync with each other. Every unit is just collapsing at the seams, and the season's already out of hand. It would make sense if that happened if they were 1-5. But they're 3-3. Everything they want is still right in front of them. They still control their own destiny. You win this game on the road in Dallas, that's huge, especially heading into some tough games coming up. That momentum, winning 3 of your last 4 games, would be awesome. That's why it's frustrating to see this drama, because it's just not needed right now. The season is very much alive. This 3-3 team feels a lot different than last year's 3-3 team. Last year's team, you could tell, they were just hanging on for dear life. Whereas this year, I feel like it's all mental mistakes. I feel like you correct a couple things here, and you catch 2 footballs, and you're 5-1. The offense has moved the ball this year at a pretty efficient level. Yes, they can't move the ball down the field without DeSean Jackson. Aguilar is struggling. You know, Doug Peterson's play calling has been on and off. But at the same time, they're one of the best third down offenses in football. They're one of the best red zone offenses in football. I think the offensive line has been pretty solid. I think Carson Wentz has been awesome this year. And on defense, the pass rush is getting going. They have 11 sacks in the last 2 weeks. I think they've been really good since the Green Bay game. You're getting guys healthy. For what I'll say about Rasul Douglas, and for what I'll bash Ronald Darby about, or Jalen Mills, at the same time, getting those guys healthy is huge. You don't want Craig James having to play if Sidney Jones is struggling or can't stay healthy. I'm never going to be a guy that is hoping for a result that backs up a take. I don't want Jalen Mills or Ronald Darby to fail now just because they're going to start over Rasul Douglas. I hope they put their money where their mouth is and they shut me the hell up. I hope that happens on Sunday night for sure. So getting those guys back, it is huge. And I want them to succeed. Like, don't get me wrong. I'm not rooting against those players. This season is very much alive. Yes, you have still some crucial injuries. Timmy Jernigan's still a couple weeks away. Not sure when DeSean Jackson's going to come back. Right now, I mean, hindsight's 20/20. I understand at the moment why he didn't get the surgery on his abdomen. But, you know, it's already been what? He hasn't played in 5 weeks. And the surgery would have took, you know, a month or a month and a half to recover from. And I get once you have the surgery, you just have to recover. There's no chance of you playing until that timetable is up, whereas now you can kind of go based on week-to-week pain tolerance. At the same time, though, he has missed now 5 games, right? From weeks 2 to 4, or 2 to 6, he's missed 5 games. And when is the end? Like, is there an end in sight? I think so, but maybe it's next week against Buffalo. But it was supposed to be this week that he returned against the Dallas Cowboys. So, yeah, they still have injuries. DeSean, Nigel Bradham banged up right now. You just cut Zach Brown, so you're going with Camus and Geary on Sunday night. Jason Peters not playing this week. So there's still things they need to get better at. They need to get healthier. But this season can be a lot different if they win this game. Now, if they drop it and they're 3-4, yeah, then, look, there's going to be even more drama, probably. People are going to be probably even more pissed off about this source, because they're going to, I think, put a lot of the blame on that, that this was a distraction for the team. I think that's definitely going to be something that happens. And if the corners are bad, if Jalen Mills is terrible and just is very limited in his injury, and same with Ronald Darby, there's going to be people calling out Jim Schwartz. So you can avoid a lot of drama by getting this win on Sunday night. They got to get it. They have got to get it. Me and Gino will be back on Sunday night after the game for the Locked On Eagles postgame show, so make sure you tune in then. Until then, I'm going to sign off here. As always, I am Louis DiBiase for the Locked On Eagles podcast. The conversation, by the way, always continues. I'll still be on Twitter after the show at DiBiase, L-O-E, or our show page is at Locked On Birds. And go bother Gino, too, at Gino_ LOE. Also, you can check us out on lockdowneagles.com. That's enough shameless plugs for the day. I'm signing off. As always, thank you for downloading. Thank you for listening. And let's go, Birds.